Accession number 30623, Reel 11.
Accession number 30623, Mr. Terry O'Leary, Reel 11. Now, you were saying about this, you know, the light broke on, this is on the morning of
fourth, that's right. Yeah.
And you saw the Chinese troops led by, continue.
No, this was the morning of the 3rd, wasn't it? Or was it, do you know, I know the action is listed, and now what's it, as the 3rd and the 4th.
You went out on patrol, you said, on the 3rd, and that was a night patrol, so next morning should have been the 4th.
Yeah, it must have been.
Unless it's all one...
Our early morning was... It was early morning of the 4th, yeah.
Okay, so what happened? You say you saw these Chinese...
Yeah, and one chap was just walking. They looked drugged or drunk to us, and we reported it as such, because this, whether he was an officer or not, was about 100 yards in front of his men, just walking along. He didn't seem to have any arms, and I must confess, I shot him. Because then the rifle fire was opening up on the chaps that were appearing from the behind him from the ravine. And they were all just looking around, you know, wondering where the firing was coming from. And then all this must have been reported back to battalion headquarters, because then
was it a mass attack behind the officer that you shot?
I was going to say, they started to come out, a platoon or... There were about... We saw 20 of them, but that must have been the front of the... Because further along to our right, the A Company was being attacked on their front as well. So, yeah, it was a big attack. B Company was forced off their positions.
Was by mass attack. Were there hundreds and thousands of them coming towards you?
Well, I never saw hundreds and thousands. No, I didn't. But there must have been a lot there. I mean, they were all along the front in the...
So what could you see? You saw this officer, you shot him, yeah. And behind him there was about a platoon.
Yeah, and then a sergeant from our support company, he appeared, and we explained that they had run back into this the end of this ravine, and he had a radio and brought down 3-inch mortars into this area, and that stopped. They never came through again, but you could see to the right. I could see B Company engaged in a big firefight. They were forced off out of their position, reformed. The Vickers machine guns, which were firing over our heads about 6 foot, into their position.
So you were getting support from the Vickers as well?
Oh, yes, Vickers and 3-inch mortars. And the 4-inch mortars opened up of the Royal Artillery. So it was a...
So it's quite a battle.
It was a battle. It was a battle.
But what you remember is shooting the officer.
Yeah, and the chaps appearing and shooting at these chaps that were the Chinese that were appearing in the platoon area in front of us. The platoon in front of us. And so it was
broke down. How did it break down?
These mortars opened up, and then you could hit, and obviously with deadly effect. In fact, the first ranging shell fell 20 yards behind us, where we normally got out of our trench to have our hot food that was brought up, and that demolished the area where we used to sit. That was the first ranging shot, and then he heard him shout up 300, and then the bombs... mortar shells started falling, and you could hear the blokes, the Chinese, screaming. It was deadly effective, deadly effective. These 3-inch mortars and the mortars from the Royal Artillery were deadly effective, and these blokes were really maimed up. At the same time, as I say, B Company was reforming, and they started a bayonet or a sword charge up the hill, and led by the Vickers machine guns that were firing into their old positions, and they regained their position, and by about 2 o'clock, everything had been regained and we had fought the Chinese off.
So what happened next?
Well, the word had come in, as I say, that these Chinese, that the Americans had withdrawn, and orders came through that we were going to withdraw that night, the 4th, late at night. But to give the impression that we were staying, we were banging in posts and putting up barbed wire just to give the impression that, as I understood it, that we were going to stay in our positions. But in the event, the order came that we were going to withdraw that night about, I can't recall, about 10 o'clock, I think, or 11, something like that.
So that's in the evening of the 4th.
On the night of the 4th, yeah. And the whole battalion was going to withdraw.
So what happened then?
So, we were given where we were to go, the order of march, that the rifle companies were coming out in, who was going first, you know, like B Company, A Company, and whatever. And we came through our position, down in front of the area where... the platoon along this river that I mentioned, and we started to go along there, but the Chinese had already regained, as we had pulled out, they mysteriously had moved in, so they were now in the positions that we had just left, and they ambushed the battalion as we were withdrawing. Or making our withdrawal.
What do you remember of that?
The support company was still firing mortars, and the tanks that were there were leaving last. And what happened was that the battalion got cut off. My company, D Company, got out, and then after that, the others were I think there was one company behind us, I wouldn't be sure, and the support company, they did get out. Some made their own way out, but they were effectively battalion was ambushed and cut, but quite a few people and made their way out, obviously, but I can remember these chaps, and it seemed as though they were only, these Chinese, were only about 40 yards away. You could see the silhouette of them, although it was dark, you could see the silhouette of them, like, because they were sort of skylined a bit, and what we learnt was when the light is down, you put your sights down, which brings the barrel down of your rifle, and therefore you shot lower. There was a tendency to shoot high in the dark, and the saying was light down, sights down, and you could hear the bullets whistling over the top, but I wasn't hit. And I don't,
were you nervous at all during any of this? I mean, I know it's...
No, the adrenaline question. Was rushing, and it was just the adrenaline was, and of course you were being whipped to get out, keep moving.
But before the big attack, had you been nervous? You know, when you got a bit of time to think, or
no, I never gave it. We hadn't met any Chinese, so once it started, it just seemed. Adrenaline rush was big, like when I was on the patrol. It never occurred to me that anybody might sort of, Chinese might be loafing around. Unfortunately, it happened to the ones
patrol
that
after.
Yeah.
Now, what happened next then?
A few were taken prisoner. I think lost, wounded and killed, the original figure was about 200, but that was reduced when people rejoined the battalion and they'd made their own way out. But a good friend of mine who was at my wedding, incidentally, Bill O'Hara, he was a sergeant, he had been a sniper sergeant for the battalion for a while, and I'd spoken to him when the word came that we were going out. He was in support company, and we went down. We met up anyway, and unfortunately, he was one that was taken prisoner, Bill O'Hara.
So where did you, well, you pulled back?
Yeah. And where did we go to then?
Didn't say any notes.
No. No. The battalion went back and reformed, I think, because we were well under strength then.
So you pulled out of the line?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Now,
in reserve.
Now, the next thing you've got is it's nearly 2 months later, is frostbite. I mean, what's happening in that
well,
2 months?
Well,
because that's the end of February.
Yeah, well, we were along the main supply route that the alongside another river. It wasn't the big river, but it was about 10 yards wide. And that was frozen over, solid. And the refugees were coming down in front of the Chinese, and we were astride the MSR, the main supply route, now real south of
and the whole battalion was guarding the
MSR. And with 25 pounders of the Royal Artillery, they were there, and you know, the normal sort of what makes up the battalion. But a lot of refugees were trying to get through the lines, and they wouldn't permit them. And all night long, all you heard was these crying and screaming and shouting. And they would light their fires. They were about a quarter of a mile in front of us. They wouldn't allow them to come any nearer. And they were told that they would have to go, west. They tried to follow the road, and they were told, no, you were to, you know, not you wouldn't be allowed through our lines. And that went on for a few nights, I recall, and bitterly cold. It was bitterly cold. And we had these boots, which I think is worth mentioning, and they were called, we were issued with them, and they were called Boots FP. And they were brown, as opposed to black ammunition, what we called ammunition boots. And I was told that it meant FP was for frostproof. That was the general saying. But I was told that they were for some previous engagement that would have, when the Russians were going to invade Poland, was it? I'm not sure. Some way back, and they were talking about sending an expeditionary
for Finland.
Finland. That's the word, yeah, that's right, Finland. And that's why, FP. And that stood for Finnish something or other. And that these boots have been in store, dubbing, and were in store, and someone has suggested in their wisdom, oh, these are the things for the Korean War. And, of course, what was happening was that the welt, I found, and quite a few, I mean, certainly mine, the welt came adrift, and the boots were flapping, and you were in snow with these bloody boots that were absolutely useless. I mean, they were letting in water, and as a result, I found that I thought I had holes in my socks. I recall that very well, and went to it was before after this. They allowed, because we were out in the open all the time, but someone gave the order that the battalions could sleep in houses requisitioned from the Koreans, because they had this underfloor like Roman heating, where they were all wooden floor, but they had openings where they put tins of, I don't know what it was, but they used to light it, and the heat would go down channels under the floor, and it was warm. But this was prior to that, and but normally we're out in the open, and
what food were you getting? Just drop that. No food.
Sometimes we were on American 24-man packs.
And what do you think of that?
Well, it was ridiculous. I mean, it was a box, and it had a packet of Lucky Strike, toilet paper, biscuits, like, you know, sweet cream biscuits. You know, it didn't seem to be any sort of, what's the word, tins of jam, powdered coffee, powdered milk. You know, it kept you going for 24 hours, supposedly. But I know the Yanks, we normally had those hardtack biscuits, and the Yanks would be pleased to be given a packet of those. They felt they were more nutritious than the stuff they were getting. And they would chew on a few of these hardtack biscuits.
Now, your feet become a problem. Tell me what happens. You get frostbite and trench foot, I think.
Yeah, what happened was I felt as though I had holes in my socks. And I decided I would change my socks. Took my socks off, and to my horror, I found that my toes were going like a horse chestnutty brown. And it wasn't normal. And I reported to the company sergeant major, told him, and he was near. And I said, "Look," and he sent me down to the told me to report to the it was sick bay, but there was a name for it. I can't recall the technical term. It was the battalion sick quarters or something. They took one look at it, and they then dispatched me off by ambulance to an American MASH unit, which was not too far away. And so I went to this American, what was it called? You used to see it on television, but it was the Military Advanced Surgical Hospital, I think was the technical thing for the MASH. And they started giving me treatment by putting my feet in
this
hot...
This is February 51.
Yeah. Hot water, then cold water, then hot water... And I could see what they were doing was trying to open up the blood vessels in the toes and the feet to restore the circulation, because I had heard that these Americans up north had amputations through frostbite, but mine wasn't as severe.
Was
as
it
that.
Frostbite or trench feet or both?
Well, it was both apparently. Yeah.
So this MASH was in Korea?
It was, yeah.
You don't know where?
No, I don't. It wasn't far from where we were, but I can't recall exactly the place where we were.
So what happened next? Because you're not there long, are you?
No, I was taken by American ambulances to an airfield and flown in the Dakota to a place in Japan, a big airfield, American airfield in Japan, along with...
What's a flight like?
Well, I can't recall. We were on stretchers. And I do recall there was no sort of bulkhead between the pilot. And if you laid your head sideways, you could look right through the into the cockpit. And I was amazed that these chaps seemed to be talking a lot to themselves and not where they was going. And that rather concerned me a bit. But whether they were on, there was such a thing as automatic pilot then, I don't know. But they didn't seem to be, you know... paying too much attention to any event. We got there safely anyway. So
where'd you go in Japan?
Then I can't recall the name of the airfield now.
Doesn't matter.
But I know the American Red Cross women were there, and they were excellent. They gave us a bag containing all your needs: shaving gear, soap, toothbrush, toothpaste. Everybody was handed. As you lay in the stretcher, one of these...
when you got there?
Yeah, when you arrived.
And were you in another American hospital, or what were you...
No,
in?
After that, we were transferred to the British hospital at...
Curie,
yeah. Where the same treatment went on. It was a question of... restoring the circulation and
did it work?
It did, yeah, it did. My big toes seemed to be the last ones that succumbed to the treatment. They were still brown, but the others sort of in the end got back to normal. And that was why earlier on the statement, I recall vividly my mother, when I was playing football as a lad, rubbing my feet because she said, you've got very poor circulation. Not that she was a nurse, but she was a midwife. She said, you've got very poor circulation, your feet, my son, and you want to keep them warm. And I do remember that vividly. But anyway, in the event, I recovered sufficiently. We did get a trip out. Some American women came and took us to Hiroshima.
What do you think of that?
It was terrible. It was 1951. Yeah, and it was still flat. You could still see across the city. It was desolate. It was, and you saw the. They pointed out the this dome framework, which was used as the dropping point for the atomic bomb. You could still. That was still there, and it was horrendous. It really was. It staggered me to see it. It's a complete city, not a town or a village, but a city completely obliterated. Completely obliterated.
Now, after that?
When I came out then, I was told we had a representative in Japan from the battalion who used to, I can't recall his technical term, but he was responsible for all the facts and figures of the battalion, how many were injured and wounded and where they were wounded. He told me that I was being posted to, not back to my battalion, but to Haramura, which is the battle training school of the what did they call it now?
So this is up at
Haramura.
And that's up in the hills above from Curie.
Away from Curie. I don't know how far, but it was a tidy distance.
Now, tell me what you were doing there.
Well, as I say, this chap told me that I was being posted up there to replace this sergeant for the Royal Army Service Corps who got in a bit of problem.
This is an orderly room sergeant.
He was the orderly room sergeant. And I was going, he said, you know a bit of typing and that, don't you? And I said, yeah, well, I've done it like, you know. Right, he said, you're being posted up there, he said, on the permanent staff. And I said, well, you know, what about the battalion? And he said, well, you'll get back to the battalion, ultimately. But at the moment, you can't go back. I think my feet, I'm not sure whether I was wearing slippers or, but anyway, obviously I wasn't fit enough to go back into the front line or for duties, and I was posted up there.
What was it like?
I was a corporal there. Well, it was all right. I had a clerk, he was a Royal Army Service Corps, and the colonel got on well with the colonel. I was introduced to the colonel and the adjutant. Got on well with.
What were your duties?
Mainly doing what orderly room sergeants do, which is preparing routines for the following day, typing them up, going with the adjutant sometimes, but not frequently, to pay some of the chaps who were in hospital in Curie. We would go down by jeep and pay them, give them their pay. Met men from the PP, Canadian Princess Pats, Canadian Light Infantry. Got on well with them because I could use my French, which they told me sounded rather Parisian as opposed to their French, which was a bit like a Cockney French. So I got on well with them. And then I was promoted orderly room sergeant.
Became the proper rank for the
job.
Yeah,
I got the rank for the job. Yeah, I was given the orderly room sergeant.
And you were there a long time. Anything happen while you were there?
No, I used to I used to do sections in the attack on the hills and.
Would you do some of that training as well, or were you just orderly room?
Yeah, just orderly room. The only thing
What was the role of the camp then? What was the camp doing?
Training people coming out from Britain and Canada and New Zealand prior to posting them to Korea.
So it was a finishing school. You know, it was giving them the final battle.
Battle training school it was, yeah. It was a battle training school. The only thing I didn't like, it was an old Japanese cavalry barracks. And the roof was, and I've always hated them, and saw a few in Korea, but I hated them. Rats. And I could hear these bloody things. You'd hear one rat run the length of the ceiling over your head when you were in bed. And then a host of rushing rats following. Oh God, I used to hate it. So in the end, I requested permission to sleep, to have a camp bed in a little caboose that I made in the orderly room. And I was permitted to do that. So that's where, as a sergeant, I slept, as opposed to being in the sergeant's quarters where all these rats were.
So it was old barracks, was it?
It was a Japanese cavalry barracks. It had been, yeah.
Now, anything else while you were there before you rejoined the unit? You're there till September.
I kept requesting permission to rejoin my unit.
Just tell me about that, because I mean, they were in action. You were fairly safe.
I was completely, and it frustrated me to think that they might think I'd let them down. That was my, you know, that the regiment would think they'd let me down. Whereas in the event, because there was the engine battle in April, and I missed that, and that sort of upset. Well, yeah, it did upset me. I felt upset until a major told me, well, you know, these things happen. After all, your commanding officer, which is true, missed the battle in January because he was ill, and he missed the battle in Jim. He wasn't in command there because he was ill. So he said, you know, you've got no reason to. This was after. But I did feel, and I still feel, you know, that I should have been there.
So where were they when you rejoined them in?
They were out of the line, or just coming out of the line. They were replaced by the Canadian Princess Pats, and then taken out of the line and replaced entirely by the Royal Norfolk Regiment.
So that's you put September, but I think that the Norfolks came in October.
It was probably
November. Yeah, October.
October, because we left in October anyway. We went back down to Pusan, and prior to going, we were under canvas. A big typhoon struck, and so we were all taken into.
What was that like?
Well, it was horrendous. We were taken into, made to go into brick-built accommodation because, you know, everything was getting whipped away. And it didn't last all that long, but sufficient to let you know that you had been in a, I think it was a typhoon or one of these type of things. I know it was extreme wind. After that, we then embarked on the Empire Fowey, was it? I'm not sure. It was another Empire boat, anyway. And the whole battalion went to Hong Kong.
Anything about that voyage?
No, nothing until all from there to Hong Kong.
And that was October?
Yeah.
And where were you based in October, in Hong Kong?
Up new, what they called the New Territories, which is Hong Kong being an island. Across the water, you've got Kowloon, which is on the Chinese mainland. And then up from, which was under, oh, I don't know, some agreement in under British control. And it went right up to the edge where there was a river of the main communist China.
And which camp were you in?
I was at Kowloon, Fanling, Fanling, Fanling. That was the camp I was in next to the, I know next door to it was the Hong Kong police dog handling, where they check for, sniff at trained dogs for drugs, and that was right alongside our camp.